It is December 29th, 1997, and I'm Andrea Meisterwan with Lee Riley at his office at the University of California, Berkeley, to do his Pew Scholars program in the Biomedical Sciences Oral History and Archive Oral History Interview. And we'll start off at the very beginning, like we always do, and ask you when and where you were born.
Okay, I was born October 15th, 1949, in Yokohama, Japan.
Yokohama, Japan. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I know that you also, that you had mentioned you lived in Tokyo and also Bangkok, Thailand, and you have a very American name, Lee Riley. So, can you tell me a little bit about your family background?
Okay. It's a very long story.
Okay, well, we've got so plenty of tape.
Well, so I was born in Yokohama. My father was in American military.
Okay.
And then my mother's Japanese. So my mother was working in an American base.
Mm-hmm.
But my father left when I was small. When I was still, I guess, a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I grew up with my mother in Japan until I was about 10, 9 or 10. And then my mother had difficulty, I guess, raising me there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was placed in an orphanage for about a year and a half. And then I was adopted into the Riley's family.
Okay.
So then the Riley's family also were my parents. The mother is Japanese. And my father is African-American.
Okay.
And so the Riley, my adoptive father, is also African-American.
Okay.
With a Japanese mother also.
Wow.
So I grew up speaking Japanese until I was about 9 or 10, only Japanese. And then when I was adopted, I started going to an American school, American military base school, in Tachikawa, which is right outside of Tokyo. And I was there until I was about 15, and then we moved to Thailand after that, because my father was in the U.S. Civil Service.
Okay.
And so my father was in Japan, I guess, for about 20 years, immediately after the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then he had a transfer of a position in Bangkok, so the whole family went to Bangkok. Where I went to high school.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, is Lee Riley your original name?
So that's my father's name. Lee Riley. He's Lee Riley the second. I'm Lee Riley the third.
Oh, the
so
third.
So my grandfather is Lee Riley the first. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that now that was that your biological father's name or
no? That's the adoptive father's. Father. Right.
And you said you were about 10 when you were how old?
9 or 10.
9 or 10. Mm-hmm. So did you know yourself as a previous name?
Mm-hmm. I had a Japanese name.
Okay.
Satoyoshi Hiroshi.
Okay, well, I'll have to ask.
Oh, Hiroshi Satoyoshi. Satoyoshi is the last name.
Okay, yeah.
You want to spell it, or?
No, we can get to the later.
Okay,
I would definitely need to spell it, because I can't find it on my own. Did you have... how old were you when you were put in the orphanage? Do you have memories of
I was about 8 and a half or so.
Of your biological mother, so you have memories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I visited my mother later when I was in college.
Okay, and do you still have contact with her?
I've lost contact.
Okay. Now.
This is a little difficult to sort of bring this up because I've never really verbalized this to into sort of a public domain, but I remember. My mother was working in the Japanese railroad company, government railroad company, and she lost a position, so it was very difficult for me to raise. And I had lots of uncles and aunts, so I was initially placed with my aunt's family for a few months, and then I guess my mother thought it was best for me to be eventually adopted into an American. It was, it was difficult. It was right after the war, after the occupation, and there was no real possibility that if I grew up in Japan that I would be able to do what I'm doing now here. She felt best that, excuse me.
Okay. Okay.
And so I guess, yeah, my mother felt, discussing with her family, that it was best for me to be sent to the U.S. or to be adopted into an American family. And so there was this orphanage which was for people like me and mixed kids.
Mixed kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're all mixed kids, so run by a Catholic mission.
Yeah.
In right outside of Tokyo. And, you know.
Did you experience a lot of discrimination because of your mixed background?
No, I actually have a lot. I mean, of course, you know, kids call you. I mean, all kinds of things. But I guess as I grew older, then no matter what you are, people call you for whatever you are. And so, in retrospect, you know, I don't think it was any different from if let's say I had grown up here.
Yeah.
But there was never. I mean, I have lots of fond memories growing up in Japan. And,
yeah.
You know. The fact that my aunts took care of me, and I also grew up with my grandfather, who was a school teacher. So my mother's working, you know, every day. So, and, you know, my grandfather was a typical sort of Japanese teacher, very, as a real disciplinarian, and very tough, and you know, but he I think had a lot to do with my, I guess, interest in science and, you know, later on. I didn't know it at the time, but he was very, how would you say, I guess as a small kid, I thought he was really mean. but he was a typical Japanese sort of teacher at that time. You know,
and how would you describe a typical Japanese teacher?
Very disciplinarian and demanding.
Yeah.
Very sort of insistent on perfection. And you know, I was a small kid, and you know, I remember coming home from school, or kindergarten, or even elementary school, and I was not allowed to go out to play until I completed some, you know, set of math problems that I think were really designed for fourth, fifth graders, and you know, things like that. And, but anyways, so my mother, I guess, had discussion with everybody and made that decision to put me in an orphanage, and then about a year and a half later, I was adopted into the Rileys.
Yeah. And in what ways did your grandfather kind of help you develop an interest in science?
It wasn't so much science. It wasn't anything that I guess he did directly. But, yeah, he had me do all kinds of things outside of school that were beyond, I guess, what I was expected to do in school. And so, yeah, I guess he instilled sort of discipline in education, or being able to, I mean, I'm only trying to explain, I guess, what he did before as an adult.
Right.
But as a child, I didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
I think, you know, it was a way of his make me be able to solve problems by myself.
Okay.
To be critically go through problems, and you know, and I think that really worked. I mean, I think just very early on he did that, and it certainly helped, I think, later. It made it easier for me, I think, later, because I, you know, I went to elementary school, I already knew how to do most of the things, and so it made my schooling very easy.
Yeah.
First few years. Until I switched to American school, because I didn't speak English, so I had difficulty with English for a while. But you know, but I quickly picked that up.
Clearly,
I still
you can't. It's very difficult.
No, when I get excited, I the accent comes through, or I drop articles.
Yeah.
Since Japanese doesn't have any articles, so you'll probably hear in my interview dropped articles or misuse of articles. But
yeah, I would guess just on the telephone, talking to you on the telephone, you wouldn't hear an accent because it's just my ears. Not very good.
So you thought I was red-haired, blue-eyed.
I had no idea. I saw your background. I thought, your CV and some other things. And I thought, I have no idea. You know, well, that's, I lived in Germany for a year. Mm. And that's one thing. It's interesting to look around in the United States because it's, the Germans would try to guess people's nationality. The teachers would try and guess people's nationalities, and invariably they got the Americans all wrong because none of our last names are.
Sure.
What is a typically American name? Lee Riley.
Right.
You know, my last name clearly threw them off. They had no idea. Well, it's interesting that you say that because I interviewed Yasushi Hiromi, and who also is Japanese and was born and raised here. And he said something very similar in that you know, he learned to solve problems, and given that your grandfather was a school teacher, is that like a pedagogical approach, would you say, of kind of the Japanese educational system, or is it maybe something more of a kind of a social cultural value that the perhaps is part of Japanese society? That what is it about problem solving that's, because he almost put it the same exact way. He got interested, he was taught how to solve problems, and it didn't matter what kind of, whether it was a mathematical problem or a writing problem.
Right.
You know, what can you, that's hard to articulate sometimes, if maybe we could pursue it a little bit more.
Well, I don't know. You know, it may be certainly what's going on now, I think, is probably different from what was going on back in the 50s. So it's hard to say whether that's, it's probably a mixture of, you know, both cultural and sort of the pedagogical system that at least existed in the 50s. You know, this was right after my grandfather was obviously in the war.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of the teachers were persecuted, you know, during the war. They tended to be anti-war or, you know, were not. You know, I don't know if this was something personal with my grandfather, or it's really, you know, I didn't know the educational system at that time, so but certainly it's not like that now. You know, right now it's all rote memorization, and you know, sort of, I think the whole educational system is geared towards trying to get kids into a good university later on, so that then they can, you know, find a permanent corporate positions, and you know, I'm not sure if they, you know, they're criticized for not putting creativity into the system, or an opportunity for creativity in their educational system, and you know, that's probably true. But back then, I don't know. I don't know how different it is now as opposed to in the 50s. Certainly they didn't have these, you know, after school, you know, intense prep schools that, you know, kids are forced to go through nowadays. Maybe, you know, because parents did it at home or something, I don't know. And my grandfather certainly did it. But I think that what was good is that it's the combination of that background as a sort of a fundamental basis and then going to an American educational system, which, you know, emphasized creativity, you know, individualism. So I had the best of both worlds.
Was your mother's family, your father, your grandfather obviously needed to go to some kind of secondary educational system to become a school teacher. And did her family come from a highly educated background, do you know?
No, I think they were, you know, sort of ordinary middle class family. My biological mother. My adopted mother, you know, I think is similar, sort of. Although she says she has some aristocracy in her distant relative or something. But
Japanese aristocracy.
Japanese. You asked me earlier about, you know, whether there was any sort of discrimination. I think my mother was more discriminated against than me. Both of my mothers. Because they married, you know, an American.
Yeah.
An African American.
Yeah.
I think that Japanese has a very interesting, I think, you know, I'm not trying to stereotype them, but they're very accommodating once something happens. They'll be very resistant until something happens, but once something does happen, then they're very accommodating, they're very flexible, and that's a very unique, I think, aspect of that culture.
Mm.
You know, as a child, I think I was very lucky.
So was there any friction between either side of the family, the Japanese side or the African American family?
Well, I never met the African American family side until I, you know, came to the States. So,
okay.
You know, when I was already starting college. So,
yeah.
Certainly, I guess, when we came, no, you know, we didn't feel that sort of thing from the American side. But on the Japanese, for instance, my adoptive mother, you know, one of her uncles totally ostracized her from the family. But there are others, you know, who, you know, accepted the whole thing. And you know, I don't know about my biological mother's side. I was small. I don't know the relatives. So. I remember going to in Japan in the summer. You know, there's a, I don't know if they still do it now, but the families go and visit their relatives who are, you know, somewhere outside of cities. So, you know, I remember going on the train with my grandfather to visit my relatives in other parts of Japan. And my mother rarely went to those. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know how this whole thing was perceived by other relatives. Mm-hmm. I just don't know.
And did you know your biological father at all? Or
I never met him. I saw pictures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know he was from Philadelphia, someplace,
yeah.
But I never really tried to find him or anything.
Yeah, and you haven't had any contact with him since coming to the United States.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. I know you were quite young when you went to the orphanage, but did your mother instill any expectations of what you should do with your life, or either your grandfather, of, you know, what one should become when one grew up?
I don't remember. Yeah, talking about those things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as a child, I didn't know about these things, you know, about discriminations and, you know, institutional sort of racism and things like that. So I guess I always wanted to be a scientist. I don't remember why, you know, what triggered it, but I remember telling teachers that I wanted to be a scientist.
And what did you think? I ask this a lot because not all the time, but sometimes that comes up. Oh, I always wanted to be a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think when you were like 7 or 8 years old, and what it was to become a scientist? What did scientists do? Can you remember what you thought you would do?
Well, you know, Japan was also going through a lot of transitions at the time after, you know, trying to build after the war. And so there were a lot of things that I remember reading, you know, comic books and things that had to do with, you know, future, you know, what's going to happen, you know, 21st century and things. And I was fascinated by, you know, the sort of the technological, I guess, promises, the development that they were all sort of writing about. And so I thought a scientist, you know, is, I wasn't so much interested in biology. I was more interested in the future thing, that to be able to, I guess, to invent things,
okay.
To be able to come up with gadgets that sort of help everyday life. And I remember discussing with my mother about, making a robot that would do all the housework. Writing an essay about a device that you put on your feet and you can sort of fly around. just coming up with these little gadgets that...
That's interesting.
Just thinking through those things. So those are the kind of things, I guess. Yeah. And I was fascinated by, just reading comic books and, these pictures of the cities of the future and all these things. And probably the most influential comic book, the story that I read as a kid is a series called the Firebird. It's actually a very famous series done by probably one of the world's best animator, Tezuka Osamu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he did the you probably remember the Astro Boy.
Yeah.
Well, he's the creator of that,
yeah.
But he also did this very serious. I think it's like a 6-part series on the Firebird. It's a fascinating story, but it's comic.
Yeah.
I read that even through college, because it's a really great story, and that really got me interested in, being in the sciences, I guess.
Yeah. Did you ever try making your robot?
No.
How much were you conceiving of these ideas? Did you get interested in jet engines or?
No, I sort of dropped those things as I got wiser.
Well, watch what you say. You never know. Somebody may come up with that idea. Then how did it? How did you adjust to being put in the orphanage?
It was difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. First, most of the kids there didn't even know parents. They were there. What they had was there were two places. It was one in Yokohama, which was for babies.
Okay.
There were didn't have parents. And then for the older kids, I guess I don't know how they organized it, but I think when they were started in the first grade, then they were put into this other place, which was right outside of Yokohama. So most of those kids came from this first one, transferred from there, so they didn't know their parents. So my mother would visit me, from time to time.
Oh, okay.
And
so
go out and continue to,
And how did you understand it at the time as to what was happening? And why you
I guess
were
I was very confused. I didn't completely understand it, but my mother, I guess, indicated to me that it was necessary because of her job, and she definitely lost her position in the railroad company, and she had to sort of look for something. And so I was made to understand that it was a temporary thing until my mother was able to resettle, and then but in the meantime, then this development with the Rileys came up.
Yeah. And how long were you in the orphanage?
About a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Rileys came, they had me come over, I guess, one weekend, and then they started the process too.
And they were living in Yokohama?
They were in Tachikawa, which is right outside of Tokyo. It was an American military base.
Place.
At that time, it was very confusing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
No doubt.
Yeah, and when my mother would come and visit me, would also go and see she would take me to my aunt's place. It was a very, very nice woman. It's always a she also, you know, underwent sort of tragedy herself, and so I think she sort of, she was, she understood, I guess, the situation. And, she would also explain to me about what was going on, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then did the Rileys explain to you what was happening when they adopted you? How did you understand that next kind of stage? Where now you have a new, you're calling somebody else mother, and, mm-hmm. You have a father now.
Right. That was also confusing, because I didn't know what this was all about. And I actually, you know, they even took me to my mother a couple of times in the first year. And, you know, I think they tried to explain to me. I don't remember how, but I guess I gradually learned to accept the Riley. I mean, they're, you know, I mean, I really liked them when I first met them. And, they eventually, I think, you know, I mean, I took them as my parents. And yeah. So, And they're still my parents. So, my father passed away about 5 years ago, but my mother lives just down the peninsula. So.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. And did your father speak Japanese?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
We spoke Japanese at home, pretty much. So. His Japanese was not that great, but.
You could understand him.
Yeah, no, I spoke English to him.
Oh.
To him directly, but, and, you know, for everybody was around, we usually spoke Japanese.
Okay, and when did you pick up English?
So when I started going to American school, so I was about 9 or 10.
Okay, and at the orphanage, were they speaking?
They were Japanese.
Japanese, yeah.
The people who were running it were actually French.
Okay.
French Catholic.
So people. Did you learn to
so
speak
actually
French?
They taught French a little bit.
Okay.
But not formally, you know.
Yeah.
I remember very fondly this one, I don't know what you call him, a priest or a father or...
Yeah, I
guess. Was a Frenchman who was a, you know...
Clergy, yeah.
A person who, you know, ran the... One of the people who ran the place, one of the junior people. And he would get, you know, get a group of kids together and teach some French words. That's when I went. It was a Catholic thing, so that's when I first got introduced to church and things like Christmases. That we had to go to the midnight mass, and but I wasn't allowed to do the communion.
Yeah.
It was funny. It was wanting to do those things because the others were, I think, baptized.
Okay.
Because they grew up. You know,
yeah.
In the orphanage. So there was two groups of kids. You know, so it was an interesting. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And were you able to identify with the other kids in the orphanage because mm-hmm. either because of their cultural, their ethnic mm-hmm. background, or perhaps because they as well were a little bit older before they were put into an orphanage and they knew their biological parents?
No, I had, you know, a lot of good friends. I mean, yeah. I remember there were all kinds of ethnic, you know, combinations. And, what we tended to do was to form little small groups. I don't remember how many kids there were, but, and usually young kids, you know, sort of linked up with some older kid as sort of like a big brother, little brother, the kind of thing. And I remember, you know, everybody had an American name also. So there was a guy named Michael who was, you know, a very good friend. That, he would always sort of try to be the protector. And he taught me how to ride a bike. It was a very, a lot of good memories about that.
Did you have an American name?
No, I didn't have an American name at the time. Again, these are, you know, Christian names that I guess they were
Christian
given
names.
Because
okay,
they were
when they were baptized.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you have any brothers or sisters, either from your biological
parents? Not from the biological parents.
From the Rileys?
Rileys. I have two sisters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they were also adopted. So.
Yeah. Are they?
So they were. I guess when I was adopted, they were already there. They're younger.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're both girls.
And are they of Japanese?
The same.
American.
Japanese mother and African American father.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think they know that they were adopted.
To this day, they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they must have been infants.
They're very small. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. And but they do they know that you are?
No, I don't think they know either.
Oh.
I think my the sister in the middle probably knows, but she's not sure.
yeah.
So.
That's interesting. How do you? How do, that's.
That's my mother's thing.
Okay.
I think she didn't want to. Them to know.
Yeah.
That's a Japanese thing too.
Okay.
As opposed to the American. Americans are more open about those things.
So. And do they live here in the States as well?
Yeah, they're both in the peninsula. One is in Sunnyvale and the other one is in San Jose.
Yeah. So. And what do they do?
So Irene, the one in the middle, works at Stanford as a blood bank technician.
Okay.
And then Gloria is actually in the U.S. Army.
Okay.
So she was in Fort Ord for a while.
And oh, yeah.
She was also working as a... blood chemistry technician.
Okay. Did they go to college as well then?
So they went to Gloria went to SF State and Irene went to college in Tennessee. So I have an aunt there. So we're all, still staying in Bangkok.
Okay.
So when I came to college, my parents were still in Bangkok, and when Irene went to college, my parents were still in Bangkok. She got sent to my aunt's place in Tennessee and went to school there. But then Gloria came when my parents came back to the States. And they settled in Sunnyvale because my father was transferred to Lockheed.
Okay.
And so, we all stayed in the Bay Area. I was in medical school at the time here, so.
Yeah.
So that's why we all ended up in Northern California.
Yeah. So are you about like 8 or 9 years older than your sisters?
So I'm, 6 years older than Irene and, 8 years older than Gloria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is very, I told you it was going to be a complicated
This is really interesting. Because I think you give a new definition to a multicultural background. And
usually my wife and my kids makes it even more multicultural.
Okay, well, we'll get to them, I'm sure.
Okay.
I wanted to ask, what was it like to grow up in Japan? How aware of you were you of kind of the destruction of Japanese society, both economically and socially, as a result of World War II? Did you see, it seems to me that you experienced the devastation quite personally, but, how...
Mm-hmm. Well,
how did you
experience
that?
It was, as a kid, you sort of, I don't know if what I know now I knew as a kid or because I, learned later, reflecting back to that period. But again, I remember going to places with my grandfather, and there's one day, and I know it now as the May Day, but I didn't know it at the time, but we're going to a park. In Tokyo, and I remember on the way to the park, there were all these people coming towards our direction with their heads bloodied and bandaged, and all these people. And it turns out it was one of the May Day riots, and one of the biggest riots they had in the 50s. It was part of the U.S.-Japan treaty renewal, and there was a lot of opposition to that. And all these people were bloodied, and I didn't know at the time, but that so there were things like that, and they even smaller, I guess. I was just beginning to recognize the world. I remember just walking up with my friends down, up the street to a fire station, which was in this corner. It was main highway. And, you know, every once in a while you'll see these tanks just coming by, coming back from China or Manchuria, yeah. Coming back, bringing all the, you know. So there was a sense of a war having had just taken place. And, you know, there was when people talk about World War I, World War II, you know, I guess that I took it as something that's supposed to happen like a natural cycle of things.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a strange thing, but yeah. As a kid, I thought it was like, it's like weather. You know, every few years you have some natural occurrence, and so war was one of those things. And so, you know, I think a lot of the kids felt the same way I did, that there was a possibility for, you know, another war. And so, I think that those kind of sentiments influenced my other sort of, I guess, views about the world later.
Which are or war?
Well, you know, I went through many periods in college. You know, I was an anti-war, you know, activist, and you know, I mean, it's corny to say, you know, I'm anti-war, but certainly, you know, I'm not someone who would advocate sort of militaristic interventions, I guess. And I think all the Japanese kids at the time, you know, growing up in the 50s, were sort of influenced by that kind of sentiment. So, very much more than, you know, kids growing up here at the time.
Yeah.
Here it was more of a fear of the nuclear, you know, Holocaust and the Cold War. Stuff. Whereas in Japan, maybe it was part of the Cold War thing too, but you know, I didn't think it was real. You know, I mean, I had relatives who came back from war. My uncle, one of my biological uncles, you know, came back from the war, and I remember him talking about, you know, his experiences in China. And, you run into people like that all the time, you know. So, I can't remember what we were talking about. But
that's okay. I could because you know, at one point, given your own background, being both Japanese and African American, that the Japanese and the Americans were enemies one day, and then suddenly all these Americans are occupying Japan, and supposedly suddenly we're friends again. And you know, how did that? Did you pick up any attitudes, one positively or negatively, being both Japanese and American? Or were you seen in Japanese cultures? Were you seen as Japanese?
Japanese? I really felt more Japanese growing up than American. I think I was uncomfortable with Americans, you know, growing up in Japan. Although, again, when I was in the orphanage, I remember, you know, very fondly, you know, again, on Christmases, so American GIs would organize Christmas parties for the kids, and we'd go to these places, and they would give us presents, and you know, everybody in Japan, all the kids, I think, grew up in Japan in the 50s with Americans as being very generous, sort of warm, you know, people. It's funny that I say this now, but, you know, they were actually very well perceived in Japan as individuals, you know, as individual Americans. They were, you know, very genuine, and in I guess what they were doing in their generosity. And I remember going to a baseball game with Americans coming in. I can't remember what American team it was, but they were playing against the Japanese, and all the other kids, you know, in the orphanage were supporting the Americans. The Americans team, whereas I was sort of rooting for the Japanese team.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So I think the Americans won.
Oh, really?
So, you know, you sort of realize which sentiments, I guess, you have by you know, that kind of event. I guess when I started going to American school, you know, then I felt more American. You know, I began to sort of, I think, move away from things Japanese. Even though, you know, we're living in Japan. But even now, when I go to Japan, I feel, you know, very relaxed. At home. So.
And what do you know at the time what the status of your citizenship was? I mean, it's become a real big issue now with all the Americans all over the world.
Right. Well, you know, the American, and when I was with my mother, my biological mother, you know, I didn't have an American citizenship. It wasn't until I was adopted. My adoptive parents had to do the paperwork to get me an American citizenship.
And what religious traditions were you raised with?
We didn't have any. I mean, my mother, my biological mother, didn't practice anything.
Buddhist or?
No, she was, you know, Buddhist, like. Most Japanese consider themselves Buddhist or Shinto, but you know, it's not like here. I mean, they do every, you know, they go to shrines, Shinto shrines for New Year's, and then they might go to, you know, Buddhist temples, and if they happen to be at a Buddhist temple, they might make some prayers, but it's not like here where you sort of attend, you know, sessions regularly, like churches or synagogues. And then my adopted parents, my father was a Protestant. We never went to church. Although I think when I was in junior high, he took us one day to a Sunday school, and we hated it. And ever since then, he never took us back. So it was just a one day thing. He thought maybe we should have religion or something. My mother was actually a Buddhist. She actually did. My adopted mother got into. Do you know the Soko Gakkai?
Yes.
So, you know, this, the Buddhist kind of a semi-political movement, and so she got hooked into that. And so she, you know, she had a little altar at home, and she would pray, and, you know, do the prayers every night, every morning. And she did that for many years. But it's not something that she did as I was growing up. It's something that she sort of adopted. I think when we were still in Japan, I think when I was about 14 or so, and she continued to do that in Thailand, and you know, there were a group of Japanese friends in Bangkok who were members of that organization, so she continued to do that, and she still does from time to time, not as religiously as, you know, she used to do it, but grow up with any sort of religious upbringing at all.
And when relatives died or anything, both in biological or adoptive families, did the Buddhist rituals?
Yes, it was usually the Buddhist thing. Yeah.
And were you taught that, given that you were the kind of the oldest male member or male son, or any of those kind of protocols? I have a girlfriend who's married to a Japanese, and he's the only son.
Right.
And they're both Buddhist and Presbyterian. It's this kind of, but they celebrate both things. She said the protocols were very ritualized, and so that they, but they try and teach her how to act in these situations because.
Well, yeah, of course, it's not a religious practice. It's more of a ritual practice,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I remember going to my grandfather's funeral, and, you know, there's certain things you do. He was cremated, and then when the bones come out, you have to pass with chopsticks one person to another, and then you put it into an urn. And so my mother was very superstitious, my adoptive mother, very superstitious, would slap our hands if we try to pass food from chopsticks to chopstick at our table. Because the only time you do that sort of thing is at these funerals. So you learn about these rituals through this kind of cultural things. But I don't know why you do that in the funerals.
Do you practice any of those kind of cultural rituals?
No, I mean, I do all the superstitious things. You know, my mother really influenced me. No, I tell my kids not to do that. And not to have chopsticks stuck in the middle of the rice bowl. You know, that's also, you only do that because you have chopsticks in the ash like this. Yeah. And so I tell my kids not to do that, and, you know, never kill any spiders before 10 o'clock in the morning, because there's usually a reincarnation with somebody.
Yeah.
It's a Buddhist idea. And I do all the Japanese, you know, New Year's celebrations.
Yeah.
And I make all the food, you know, for the family.
Yeah.
They don't like them, but the kids eat them.
Right, right. Eat your black bean on...
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then we always eat noodles before the end of the year.
Yeah.
For a long way. So, yeah. I mean, those are fun things.
Yeah. Know, okay, so now, does that go back to kind of a spiritual belief system that you have?
No.
Or is this a superstition?
It's more of a superstition thing.
Usually fight with
instilled.
Scientists.
It's been instilled in me by my mother.
Yeah.
So...
And are you planning on instilling these in your children as well?
It's up to them if they want to do it. we're not bringing them up in any sort of religious. My wife's father was Jewish and mother is Catholic, and
wow.